All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our Thursday morning Shir at the Young Israel of Woodmere. There's a handout at the corner of the Bima, so if you took it, good. If you didn't, please make sure to take it before you sit down. For people at home, I will be screen sharing for you so we can all follow along the Shir. So today we're going to be learning some perhaps familiar pieces of Gemara, but with new insights that maybe I wasn't familiar with, and maybe it will be new for you as well. We're going to be talking today about Rabbi Akiva. We are in the time period of Sfiras HaOmer, rapidly approaching Lag BaOmer. 33 Omer is Monday night, Tuesday. Today is the 28th day of Omer. We are in this period of counting Sfiras HaOmer. Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah de Oraisa in this week's Sadra and Parshas Emor. And Parachov Gimel, the Torah moves through the whole calendar year. And this week's Sadra begins with Shabbos. Rosh Chodesh is Parachov Gimel Pasuk Dalet, according to Rashi. And then we begin with Karban Pesach, Chag HaMatzos, the bringing of the Omer, the counting of the Omer, the Shtei Halachim on Shavuos. We have Yom Teruah Yelachem, what we call Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippurim, V'Nisim Asnafsho Serechem, Chag HaSukos, and Shmini Atzeres. So Parachav Gimel moves through the entire calendar year of the Jewish calendar year, the De'oraisa commemorations and Mo'adim. And after we are told to bring the Korban Omer, which was, of course, an Omer of barley, which was offered on the 16th of Nisan. This is on this week's Sadra, Parshas Emor. Today we don't have a Beis Hamikdash. We do not have a Korban Omer. Our count of Sfiras HaOmer is a commemoration and a remembrance of what was in temple times. We do not have the Korban Omer today. Nobody goes up to the Har HaBayis with the Kohen, and there's no Omer Tnufa, Omer of waving, of the first of the barley offerings. On 16 Nisan, we bring the first barley offering, and 50 days later, on Chag HaShavuos at Tzeres, we bring the wheat. So this is an agricultural period in Eretz Yisrael, which is a celebration of really the first two of the Shivat HaMinim. The Pasuk tells us in Devarim Parachas Pasuchas, it is an Eretz Chito U'Sa'ora, V'Gefen U'Tein V'Rima, and Eretz Seishem U'Devash. The first two of the Shivat HaMinim are Chita and Sa'ora. So on the 16th of Nisan, the Yom Mimacharas HaShabbos, which the sages say means Mimacharas HaPaschag HaMatzos, so of Karban Pasuch is 14 Nisan Bein HaArbayim, then Chag HaMatzos begins on the 15th of Nisan, and the Korban Omer is offered, non-chametzdik offering, on the 16th of Nisan, and that's when the farmer begins to count. Today is day one since I brought the Korban Omer. Today is day two since I brought the Korban Omer. Today is day three since I brought the Korban Omer. The count has to do with a count from the barley offering up to the wheat offering, the bikurim of the shtei halacham, the chita. It is chametz te'afena. This is all in Parachav Gimel. So we are counting Sfiras HaOmer as a commemoration for what was in biblical times. And the Pesukim tell us in Chav Gimel, Tes Vav through Tes Zayin, who shall care for yourself for the morrow of the Sabbath, which means the day after Pasach, from the day you bring the Omer of waving, which is 16 Nisan, it should be 7 complete weeks, until the morrow of the 50th day, we count 49 days, and on the 49th day, it's the final day, on the 15th, we bring the Bikurim, we bring the Shtei Halacham. So that's what Sfiras HaOmer is. And it's just important, that's a very, very quick, very, very quick overview of why we are counting Sfiras HaOmer. I saw actually when I was preparing the Shir that according to the Rambam, I didn't see the Rambam inside. I saw it quoted that according to the Rambam, again, I didn't look up the Rambam inside, so I hope it's accurate, that today Sfiras HaOmer is still a mitzvah d'oraisa, which is extremely interesting because many others hold that it is not a d'oraisa. Why is it not a d'oraisa today? I saw he was like a yachid, the Rambam. Everyone else, again, I haven't looked up the Rambam, so I hope it's accurate. I saw it sourced somewhere else in preparation of Shir. There's no Korban Omer. There's no Beis HaMikdash. There's no Kohen who's waving anything. You're not counting from the barley offering to the wheat offering, which is why after you count Sfiras HaOmer, what do you say? HaRacham anhu yachazir lanu avodos Beis HaMikdash im kohen bimher b'yameinu amin sal. It's a tefillah that the Avodah Beis HaMikdash should be brought back, that it shouldn't just be a remembrance on a calendar or on a WhatsApp or an email that you got a reminder, I have to count. You're supposed to be counting from the time that you bring the barley, the Seora, to the time you bring the Chita. Agricultural festival, celebrating the bounty and giving thanks to God for the bounty of the land of Israel. That's what Sfiras HaOmer is. It's just, I think, very important to state that at the outset, to know why we're counting. It's in this week's Sedra. You could open a Perach of Gimel and see it. And that's what Tfiras Omer is. Now, it happens to be, nothing is, of course, Ein Mikra Ba'olam. It happens to be that during this time period, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died. And I think the reason it's important to start our shir with that overview of the Sedra is because we should just know why we're counting Tfiras Omer. There's nothing about Rabbi Akiva in the Torah. There's nothing about Matan Torah in the Torah. You count Omer because you're counting from barley to wheat, from Seorah to Chita, from 60 Nisan till you count 49 days, the 50th days, the Shtei Halachim, the Bikurim, the Chametz Te'afet, a fight. Now we're going to go to our first source, which is, I'm going to screen share for those at home, Yevamos Samech Beis Beis. Here we go. I can't see anybody right now. Okay, but I hope you can see that it says Yevamos 62B on the screen. Someone's nodding yes. Okay, fine. If not, you can post on the chat. For some reason, you don't see it. So we're going to look at the very famous piece of Gemara. Again, we're going to be looking at three famous pieces of writings of the sages, but with three, for me at least, new insights and approaches to these three famous pieces. Okay. So this piece of Gemara is very famous, and it's from Maseches Yevamos Samech Beis Beis. On the top of your handout, it says Yevamos 62b. Hayulu banim biyalduso, yula banim skunoso. If someone had children in his youth, he should have children in his old age. Shenemar, why? Baboker, the Pasuk says in Kohalas, you see on your footnote 11:6, Kohalas Yud Aleph Vav, because the Pasuk says, Baboker zera et zarecha, vila erev al tenach yadcha, ki ein chayode eze yichshar hazo ozev im shneim kacha tovim. So the Gemara darshins is Pasuk from Kohalas, Yud Aleph Vav, and the Pasuk says, in the morning you shall sow, in the morning you shall sow your seed, and in the evening, do not let your hand rest. Don't be idle. So the morning represents the years of your youth. Excuse me. The evening represents the years of your old age. Because you don't know from which will you see the fruits of your labor. From the work of your youth or from the work of your old age. And maybe both of them will be equally successful and fruitful. So just because you worked in your youth, i.e. in the morning, it does not mean you should not sow your seed and continue to plant and work and grow in your old age, because you don't know from which you will have the most success, the work of your youth, the morning, or the work of your old age. This year, for the first time, it occurred to me that a beautiful example of this, I never thought of it before, and all my years have studying and teaching this piece of Gemara, but it occurred to me that a perfect example of this is Adam HaRishon. Because Adam had children in his youth, I mean, he was created fully formed, but he had children in his youth. That was Cain and Hevel. And that was Baboker Zerah at Zeracha. But of course, Cain killed Hevel. They didn't go over so well. And then in Perikei Pasuk Aleph, when it lists the generations of man, the Torah tells us that Adam, Vayeda Adam is Chava Ishto, Vatahara Tele Bein, who did she have? Shes, Shin Tav, Shes, or Shet, however you pronounce it, Shes. And from Shes, the world was populated. So Adam had children in his youth, and then he had children in his, a child in his old age. And you don't know from which one you will have success, this one or this one. Cain and Hevel didn't work out so well. But from Shes, he had success. So therefore, I think it's a good example. How you abadim ba yaldu, so you abadim skunos. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. Next, Rabbi Akiva over. Rabbi Akiva then says, Lamad Torah ba yaldu, so if you learn Torah in your youth, yilmod Torah b'skunos. There's no such thing as I'm too old, I can't learn, I did that in seminary, that's for high school, I'm past my prime, chas v'shalom, no matter what age, stage, and decade a person is in his life. Lamad Torah b'yaldu, so yilmad Torah b'skunaso, if he learned Torah in his youth, he should learn Torah in his old age. Hayulo talmidim b'yaldu, so if you had students in your youth, yulo talmidim b'skunaso, you should have students in your old age. Why? So the Gemara quotes the same Pasuk, Rabbi Akiva says, because the Pasuk says in Kohalas, b'boker zerat zarecha, so this Pasuk from Kohalas here by the Gemara can be understood in one of three ways. Either the piece we're looking at, it applies to having children in your youth and children in your old age. In the morning, sow your seed. In the evening, don't let your hand be idle. It applies to learning Torah. You should learn Torah in your youth. You should learn Torah in your old age. It applies also to establishing students, to those that you teach. You should establish students in your youth and students in your old age. Amru. And now we come to the very famous piece of Gemara that I'm going to offer a new approach to. Amru Shneim Asra Elef Zugim Talmidim Hayulo the Rabbi Akiva. Very, very famous. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students. Migavas and Antiparas, from these two cities and regions in Eretz Yisrael, he had so many students, 12,000 pairs is 24,000 students. The Kulan Mesu Beperek Echad, we all know this, it's so famous. Mipreshel and Ahagu Kavod Zalazat. They all died during one time period because they did not give kavod to one another. It's a difficult gemara because people wonder, how could it be that the students of Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, who in Parshas Kedosh, and last week, Vayikra 19:18 says, the pasuk says, Lo si kom lo si tars b'nei amecha, v'ahavto recha kamocha, ni Hashem, v'ahavto recha kamocha. Amar Rabbi Akiva, says Rashi, zekal gadol b'tar, how could it be, everyone kashos, that the students of Rabbi Akiva, the gadol hador, the b'nei tar of the generation, did not have kavod for one another. So, until preparing this year, I knew three answers. Now, after preparing this year, I have four answers. Okay, one answer, I'm just going to tell you that through quickly. I don't want to get into them at all for purposes of today's learning. One, I first heard many years ago at the Jewish Center of Atlantic Beach by Rabbi Ari Pearl, and he quoted in the name of Rav Soloveitchik. Then, a few years later, I heard Rabbi Shai Schachter say in the name of his father, Rav Herschel Schachter Shlita. So the first time I heard it was from Rabbi Ari Pearl and JCAB, who quoted the Rav. And then a couple of years after that, I heard Rabbi Shai Schachter say in the name of his father, the Rosh Hashiva Shlita, Rav Herschel Schachter. And that is that it was a Shas Hashmad. It's written in a metaphor or euphemism. Chazal knew that everybody would look at this piece of Gemara and say, how could this be? It has to be impossible. It must be something else. We would accept, we would realize that we can't accept this at face value. Can't possibly that the students of Rabbi Akiva did not have kavod for one another. It must be that it was a Shas Hashmad. We know that Rabbi Akiva lived at the time of Churban Bayis Sheni and the Bar Kokhba rebellion when the Romans were slaughtering Jews. And actually, so these are I gave you my two sources where I heard this, the Romans were killing the B'nai Torah in the land. That's much more believable. Could you imagine what that means about our history? That's much more believable than Lo Nahagu Kavod Zelazeh. So that's one shot. Second shot comes from Rabbi Zavlev. Rabbi Zavlev Shlita says, the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos Ein Kavod Ela Torah. Kavod equals Torah. So when it says, M'pnei Shlo Nahagu Kavod Zelazeh, they didn't share their Torah with each other. They were stingy, if you will, with their Torah, with their accomplishments in Torah, with their learning Torah, with their Divrei Torah. Third shot from Rav Avigdor Miller, Zatzal Rav Avigdor Miller says, oh yeah, I gave a shir, it's on YU Torah, you have to listen to the whole shir. They examined themselves, try and say it very fast, they examined themselves and they found themselves deficient. But what were they deficient in? They were fine B'nai Torah. They kept kosher, and Chal Yisrael, and Pas Yisrael, and Yashan, and they didn't mingle with society. They did a cheshbon and nefesh, and they determined about themselves, it must be that we weren't nice enough to our fellow. When something happens to a person, they have to do cheshbon and nefesh. This plague started, so they started to examine in what area they felt they were lacking. And they realized that they must be lacking in Kavod Habrios because everything else was on par. It must be our Bein Adam Lechaver is remiss. So it's the students themselves telling you what they noticed about themselves. Fine. Now I'm going to quote from a fourth pshat that I never came across before preparing this year. And it's really very, very interesting. Okay. It comes from Rabbi Benjamin Yudin. Rabbi Yudin teaches, in Parshas Emor, not only do we read about Sfiras HaOmer. Oh, wait, let's just finish the Gemara, okay? Let's finish the Gemara first. V'hayah ha'olam shamim, the world was desolate. Atshabar Rabbi Akiva Eitzer al-Basenu Shabadaram, Ushan Alam, the world was desolate. So Rabbi Akiva went to our rabbis in the south, and he started all over again with five students. Rabbi Meir, which is Rabbi Meir Habal HaNes, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, which is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, Behem Heme Midu Tar Oso Shah, and it is they who upheld Torah at that time. Tana Kula Mesu Mi Pesach Va'aratzeras. There you go. That's why Sfiras HaOmer is so closely associated with the students of Rabbi Akiva, even though we started with a 5-minute understanding based on this week's parsha that in the Torah it has nothing to do with Rabbi Akiva, and that's not why you're counting Sfiras HaOmer. Okay, should be clear. They all died from Pesach Ta'atzeras. What did they die from? A bad death. What was the bad death? Askara. Askara is particularly dehumanizing because it is an inflammation of the throat and it blocks the victim's power of speech. Okay. Now I'm going to go to this idea, not this idea, the statement of Chazal, Mipnei Shelo Nahagu Kavod Zelazer. What is the Torah, not the Torah, Torah Shebal Peh, what is the Gemara teaching us? And this is a very, very interesting approach, and it comes from Rabbi Benjamin Yudim. In Parshas Emor, we not only read about Sfiras Omer, but we are in the middle of the observance of Sfiras Omer, which is how we started Shir. The Ramban, Nachmanides, teaches from the Torah that these days between Pesach and Shavuos are happy days. They are days of anticipation, yearning, and excitement. We are counting from our liberation, Yitziat Mitzrayim, to relive the moment of the revelation, of the greatest revelation to his entire nation that the world has ever known. Something unprecedented in world history. So we're counting from Yitziat Mitzrayim to Zman Matan Torah Seidu. The rabbis remind us the very purpose of creation was for the giving of the Torah. Okay, so this is a joyous time. First of all, it's an agricultural festival. And second of all, it's a time when we count from slavery to freedom, not only physically, but spiritually as well. In Mitzrayim, we were of the Avodah Zarah. Rashi, Parshas Bo, 12:21, Mishchu, Chul, Chamtson, V'shachatu, Pesach, Isha, Michros, Seihem. In Egypt, we were idol worshippers with Rashi to that Pasuk. And by Matan Torah, we were on the greatest possible level ever. So it's a time of joy, says the Ramban. The Gemara, and now Rabbi Yudin quotes this piece of the Gemara that we just looked at, teaches that 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died during this time period of Sfiras HaOmer, and for this reason, the Shulchan Aruch legislates some mournful observances. No weddings, no haircuts, during these 33 days of Omer to commemorate the deaths of the students of Rabbi Akiva. The cause for their dying is given in the Gemara, like we saw, Mipnei Shelo Nahagu Kavod Zelazeh. The Mesilas Yesharim, Rabbi Yudin quotes the Mesilas Yesharim, takes this most literally. And the Mesilas Yesharim in chapter 22, which I did not look up, accuses them of a lack of Derech Eretz, a lack of Menschlichkeit, which is a prerequisite for Torah. The rabbis teach us in Pirkei Avos, Im Ein Derech Eretz, Ein Torah. If there's no Derech Eretz, there's no Torah. This is found as well in Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Elazar ben Azari teaches, if there's no respect, there's no Torah. And Rabbeinu Yonah teaches, one has to refine their character as a prerequisite for Torah. So the most basic understanding of the pshat is, the Mesilas Yesharim says it's mamish the pshat, they lack Derech Eretz for one another. It's still hard to understand, but that's the pshat of the Gemara. The Maharsha, Rabbi Yudin quotes the Maharsha, which I sort of quoted already from Rabbi Zavlev, because that's what I heard from Rabbi Zavlev say a couple of years ago. The Maharsha understands this deficiency specifically in the realm of Talmud Torah. Instead of praising one another for their unique understanding, unique contribution to Limud Torah, they viewed the other as a threat and competition to their individual self-worth. So if you're great in Torah, I can also be great in Torah. So it must be that I must be greater than you. It became like a competition. If Neshul and Ahagul Kavad Zalzeh, the Maharsha says that the deficiency was in the realm of Talmud Torah. Of Nesson Tzvi Finko, Zechat Tzadok Levracha, the great, great Rosh Hashiva, Vishivas Kmir Yerushalayim. Of Nesson Tzvi Finko, Zechat Tzadok Levracha, Yurtzeit is Yerah of Cheshvan. We just had his 10th or 11th Yurtzeit. He said, Ahavas Torah is not when your base medrash is full. Ahavas Torah is when your fellow Rosh Hashiva's base medrash is full. So it's not to be great in Torah for yourself and to hold on to that Torah like it's mine. It's to share the joy of Torah, appreciate when others are successful in Torah. So according to the Maharsha, which again, I heard Rabbi Zavlev say a couple of years ago, I don't know if he quoted the Maharsha and I just forgot, I don't know, that this idea of L'mnei Shelo Nahagu Kavod Zelazeh Ein Kavod Ela Torah, they didn't share Torah with one another. Okay, but Rabbi Yudin now offers his own suggestion. So we have the pshat, mamish the pshat, which the Mesilas Yesharim says is what it sounds like. They lack Derech Eretz. We have Rabbi Zavlev / the Maharsha. They didn't share Torah with each other. We have Rabbi Ari Pearl quoting the Rav, and Rav Shai Shachter quoting his father, Shlita Rav Hershel Shachter, that it was a shas hashmad. We have Rabbi Victor Miller, who explains, go listen to my shir from last Thursday night. When will everyone around here understand that we are all brothers? It's worth it to listen. Rabbi Victor Miller, who explains that they did a cheshbon and nefesh, and they thought, what are we deficient in? It must be we're deficient in Bein Adam Chaveiro. And now Rabbi Yudin gives his own pshat, and it's really fabulous. I'd like to suggest, I'm quoting Rabbi Benjamin Yudin, an explanation of lack of kavod. Respect, lack of respect to one another, based upon the teaching of the Shem Mishmuel. He's bothered, as we all are. How is it possible that the students of Rabbi Akiva, who learned with the Gadol, I mean, the greatest Tana who ever lived, the Gemara tells us in Menachos Chav Ches that Moshe Rabbeinu, when it was time for the giving of the Torah, he saw God attaching crowns to the letters. And Moshe said, Hashem, what's holding you up from giving the Torah? So Hashem said, I'm attaching the crowns, the Tagin. So Moshe said, why do you need to attach the crowns? So God said, somebody will arise, Akiva ben Yosef, who will derive lessons from the Tagin. So Moshe said, show him to me, Menachos Chav Ches. So Hashem put him in Rabbi Akiva's base medrash. He sat in the eighth row, and the Gemara says he didn't understand. Moshe didn't understand Rabbi Akiva's lesson. This is who Rabbi Akiva was. So many are bothered by how is it possible that the students of Rabbi Akiva, who not only heard the teaching of their great rabbi, that v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, Rashi says on the pasuk, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, zekal gadol b'torah, that they were the students of a person who personified his teachings. He lived by what he taught. They didn't just read his writings, they saw a living example of what it means to be a Rabbi Akiva. How is it possible that they would be deficient in this area? And now Rabbi Yudin distinguishes between ahava and kavod, love and respect. This is really a beautiful chiddush. Maybe I never saw it brought down anywhere. I never heard anyone propose this. It's really beautiful, and you're going to see how relevant it is. Again, what are we doing today? Looking at three passages of Chazal and offering new interpretations into familiar stories, familiar narratives. The Shem Yishmuel answers, there's a significant difference between love, which is ahava, and respect, which is kavod. Love is an emotion that most often emerges from and pervades a natural organism. We are natural organisms. We spoke about last week our connection to the soil and Adam and Adama. Love is an emotion, a natural emotion, which emerges from the love of a mother for a child. It emerges and pervades an organism. It emerges and pervades, you're an organism. Okay, makes sense. There is love within a family unit, and therefore they're a family unit. Love stems from the commonality, commonality that individuals share together. We are a family unit. We are a chabura who learn Torah together. We are part of a kihila. We are students of one Rav. That joins us with love. We share a common bond. That common bond unites us, and it leads us to love each other. Thus, the students of Rabbi Akiva followed very nicely the teaching of their rabbi. They loved all Jews. Their rabbi said, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. The pasuk says, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. And love came to their rabbi and said, zekal gadol b'torah. And they said, gevaldik. It's a great principle of the Torah. You have to love every Jew. We have a common destiny, a common history, a common fate, a common story. It unites us. I love every Jew. The Jewish people shared, in Rabbi Yudin's word, shared a common pedigree, history, destiny. It contributes to unite them. V'yichan sham yisrael neged har, kish echad b'lev echad. In addition, the Torah commands them to love one another. They were great b'nei Torah. They loved one another. Respect, kavod, is something different than ahava, love. Respect, on the other hand, emerges not from commonality, common bonds, but the reverse. Respect does not emerge from that which is common amongst us. Respect for another person emerges from recognizing, appreciating, and giving respect to that person's unique differences. One notices the unique features that mark someone else's individuality. There's something different about you than me, and I admire your positive traits. I consciously or subconsciously desire to emulate your traits. I notice something about you that's different than me, and I respect that, and I admire that. And I can appreciate who you are even though you're different than me. Think of how many kinds of Jews there are. Hasidim, yeshivish, I don't know, whatever, not labeled, modern Orthodox, Chiloni, Mamlachti Dati, think of religious Zionists, post-Zionists, think of any kinds of Jews there. Love is something that unites us because we share a common bond. We share a common destiny. We all have the patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as our forefathers. We all went down to Egypt. We all left Egypt. We're all persecuted at the same time by the Ummah Sa'olam. Respect comes from noticing your fellow Jew is different than you. Whether he dresses different than you, speaks Hebrew, the dialect is different than you, eats a different hechsher than you eat, wears a different hair covering that you wear, lives in a different community, but you could still respect that person. In order for respect, Rabbi Yudin continues, to emerge and prevail, one must note how different a person is. And he shines in that particular realm. The students of Rabbi Akiva followed their teacher. The intense love for every Jew, they had love, led them to relax any and all formality. They viewed each Talmud as the same. We're all the same as each other. They overlooked the unique strengths and missed an opportunity to respect what was unique and individual about each other. They lacked individual recognition, and therefore respect did not emerge. He's going to bring it down. There's going to be one short paragraph, and then he's going to show you how this is still so relevant for our day and age. You can love all Jews, but do you respect all Jews? Ask yourself that question. Honestly, you don't have to answer. You could love all Jews, but do you respect all Jews? My daughter told me, I don't remember where she learned it. I think it was in high school. I don't know where she learned it. There's a saying, the Welt says, by the Jews, they say, I love all Jews. Except the Hasidim, they double park and the stores are packed and they speak Yiddish and I can't understand. Except the Yeshivish, why can't they go to work? Who ever heard of learning all day? Except the settlers, why are they provoking the Arabs? Except the Chiloni, why can't they? I love every Jew, except. The non-Jews say, I hate every Jew. Except my dentist. He's the best dentist I ever had. Except my accountant. He saves me so much money in tax returns. We say, I love every Jew. But do we really respect every Jew? Do we really actually respect every Jew? Anyway, when I speak about these ideas, it doesn't mean, I don't mean to endorse that you have to, in order to respect another Jew, it doesn't mean you have to be like the other Jew. So if you have a Jew who drives on Shabbos and eats in McDonald's, I don't suggest that you go after his behavior. But leave the judgment up to God. It's not your business. Try and show him the beauty of Shabbos, speak respectfully to him, try and show him what it means to be a Torah Yid, but you don't have to judge him, it's not up to me. So I just want to clarify that when I speak about Ahavas Yisrael and accepting that there are other Jews who are different than us, I don't mean that you should be like them if it's not the Torah Dik Mahalach, if it's not the Halacha Dik Mahalach. But that doesn't mean you can't respect that they are a Yid. Rabbi Yudin says that the fifth of the Aseres HaDibros does not legislate loving a parent because it's natural to love a parent. What is the fifth of the Aseres HaDibros? Kabeid es avicha ve es imecha. Not ve ahavta es avicha ve es imecha. The Torah does not command us to love, but rather to respect. Very brilliant. For often the child will not necessarily adopt the same ideology and lifestyle of the parent, but the child still must respect the parent's unique traits and way of life. I'm going to turn that over, and I'm going to say the parent must still respect the child's ideology and way of life. Because what I hear more than children not respecting their parents, but I hear more is about some people I've spoken to personally, people come to me, that parents have a very hard time accepting the child is more from them the family, less from them the family. It doesn't say va'ahavta, kabeid. There is not the same thing, love and respect. The students of Rabbi Akiva failed to recognize and learn from each other. And now Rabbi Yudin says, it is sad to say, but we repeat this tragic mistake of our past. Ideally, we love all Jews. That's the easy part. Of course I love all Jews. The Torah says, love all Jews. However, even within the Orthodox community, he's talking about in the Orthodox community, never mind the non-Orthodox Jews. Even within the Orthodox community, there are divisions. There's modern, There's yeshivish. There's Hasidish. There's religious Zionists. There's anti-Zionists. And too often, we might love them all, yet we fail to sufficiently note their noble and distinguishing character traits. And so we lack respect for another group. My way of life is the right way, so your way of life can't be the right way. Our instinctive, immediate dismissal of their identifying outer trappings, preclude us from considering and incorporating many of their positive features into our life. This might well be characterized, lo nahagu kavod ze laze, as not showing respect. Remember what my daughter taught me. I remember what she was going to do. I love all Jews, except that one, and except this one, and except that one. And the guy says, I hate all Jews, except. The same page of Talmud, same Amud or Daf of Talmud, I didn't look it up, I'm quoting Rabbi Yudin. Later on the same Amud or Daf, the Gemara condemns the students of Rabbi, that the same place that the Gemara condemns, Yevamos Samech Beis, the students of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara presents the ideals of marriage. And the Gemara says a husband is to love his wife as himself and respect her more than himself. When it comes to marriage, the spouses must have love, but they also must have, because they're not the same people. They didn't have the same background, the same upbringing, the same parents, the same education. In fact, they spent many years, probably at least 2 decades before they came together. They're not the same. They're compatible, but they're not the same. We're not clones of each other. That means the spouse has things that are different than the other spouse. And the husband and wife will have differences of opinions, will have differences of mahalach, might even be different religiously to a degree for the marriage to work. But the Gemara says on the same Amud, or Daf, I'm not sure, I didn't look it up, quoting Rabbi Yudid, the same Yevamo, Samech Beis, that says the students of Rabbi Akiva are faulted, Mipnei Shelo Nahagu Kavod Ze Laze, the Gemara tells you about a marriage. And a man must love his wife as himself and respect her more than himself. This is precisely, says Rabbi Yudin, the message we are meant to learn. Love comes from being a single unit. Respect comes from noticing the distinguishing traits of another person. It's brilliant, Chiddush. And that, according to Rabbi Yudin, is what the students of Rabbi Akiva lacked. I love every Jew, except that one. Of Elimelech of Lezhinsk, one of the most outstanding Hasidic leaders of the 18th century, very famous. Tein bilibenu shenira mayres chaverenu velo chesronam. Some say it before they daven. Very, very famous tefillah of Rav Elimelech of Lezhinsk. Please Hashem, put in our hearts, we should see the mylos from the word aliyah, the positive attributes of our friend and not their deficiencies. May we follow in these footsteps, shatein bilibenu shenira mayres chaverenu velo chesronam, thereby not only loving every Jew as part of Klal Yisrael, by respecting them for their individuality. It's true, Hasidim have a very different lifestyle than me. It's true. Okay. I could love another Jew, but do I respect another Jew? I have to respect their way of life also. And it's very important, and it's a beautiful chiddush. It's not only to love every Jew. It's to note that we are individuals. We have different ways of life, even within the family unit, like we've seen. It doesn't say in parent-child relationship, ahavta. It says kabed. Because the child must respect the parents, and I'm going to say the parents have to respect the child. It's just interesting to me. When you have a more modern Orthodox family and the child becomes more right-wing, I'm using labels, I know, I'm sorry. It's difficult for that family. And when you have a more right-wing yeshivish family and the child becomes very modern-orthodox, it's difficult for the family, often. Maybe not for you. It happens. So I was saying to myself recently, off the derech, has a different meaning. It means you're off my derech. Whatever my derech is, you went off. I sent you to Israel. What happened to you? Love, I love every Jew. But we need to ask ourselves, do we respect every Jew? And the Gemara does not say, Mipnei shelo nahagu ahava ze lo ze. It says, Mipnei shelo nahagu kavod ze lo ze. And it carries a tremendous Mussar Haskel and relevant lesson for all of us in our day and age as well. Okay, that's one very famous piece of Gemara, Yevamo Samach Beis Beis. Maybe that was new for you. It was certainly new for me. And I think it's tremendous. So now we have five answers as to what Mipnei Shelo Nahagu Kavod Ze Lo Ze means. Let's now look at the next famous piece of Mamre Chazal and also offer new insights. Every piece that we're looking at today centers around Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because it's fear. So Omer and his students died during this time period. That part should be very clear. Okay, now we go to a passage in Magid. This is quite soon in the beginning of Magid. I just need a tissue, 1 second. Okay, this passage is in the beginning of Magid, right in the beginning. Avadim hayinu l'par b'mitzrayim. Yachamei Rosh Chodesh. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, v'Rabbi Yoshua, v'Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, v'Rabbi Akiva, v'Rabbi Tarfon, shahayim mesubim b'Bnei Brak. There is a story told, an incident happened with Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon, that they were reclining in Bnei Brak. They were telling the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim that whole night, until their students came and said to them, Rabboseinu, our rabbis, he gives man kriya shema shel shachris. It's a very famous passage. It's right at the beginning of the Magid. Even the people who are asleep by the end of the Seder are usually still awake at this point in time. And once again, we have a famous story, narrative, about Rabbi Akiva, and in this case, his colleagues. So I'm now going to quote from Rabbi Shmuel Golden in his Sefer Unlocking the Haggadah. When I quote from Rabbi Golden, I'm usually quoting from Rabbi Golden Unlocking the Torah Text, his Asfar Man Chumash. This is Rabbi Shmuel Golden Unlocking the Haggadah. Okay. So let's talk about this passage and further lessons from Rabbi Akiva. A fascinating puzzle, however, arises regarding the presence of one of the participants in Bnei Brak. To understand this difficulty, we must have a brief halachic review, says Rabbi Shmuel Golden. The Talmud in Maseches Psachim records a debate between Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, who is at the Seder, and Rabbi Akiva. What was the halachic debate between these two sages? Concerning the time by which the Karban Pesach was meant to be consumed. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah said it had to be consumed by midnight. And Rabbi Akiva says the Karban Pesach may be eaten until dawn. So they had a machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says, no, it has to be eaten by Chatzos Laila, the Karban Pesach. Rabbi Akiva says, no, we could eat it till dawn. This disagreement carries practical implications even to this day. Even absent the Karban Pesach. Why? Because Rava contends that the matzah consumption on Seder night is subject to the same time constraint of the Karban Pesach. If that's the case, when do you have to eat Afikomen by? Do you have to eat Afikomen by Chatzos Laila, or do you have till dawn to eat Afikomen? Rabbi Yosef Cairo rules in the Shulchan Aruch that the Afikomen should be consumed by midnight. That's how we paskin. Finally, some scholars go one step further. They argue Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim is subject to the same time restriction as eating of the Karban Pesach and Matzah. So do you have to finish Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim by Chatzot Laila, like Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says, or can you read it till dawn, like Rabbi Akiva says? So this debate between when do you have to consume the Karban Pesach between these two Tanaim does not only affect the Karban Pesach, it also affects Matzah, says Rava, Zman Achilas Matzah, and it also affects Man Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim. If this is correct, however, how could Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah have participated in a Seder discussion that lasted till morning? Now, who's at the Seder? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. That means he's having, it's in the aftermath of the Korban. So there's no Korban Pasach. But there is Matzah and there is Sipur Yitzhiya Mitzrayim. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah does not hold like Rabbi Akiva. Perhaps, and this is so beautiful because unbeknownst to me, what I was preparing, it wasn't planned. I chose to focus on Rabbi Akiva, choosing three beautiful, famous passages, and then asking Hashem for Siyata Deshkenaya that we should become enlightened with new insights we've never learned before. This ties in so beautifully to what we just learned. I'm quoting directly from Rav Shmuel Golden, Unlocking the Agada, page 70. Listen carefully. Perhaps this episode reflects the great respect the rabbis of the Talmud showed for each other. The great respect the Tanaim had. B'nai Brak, whose city was B'nai Brak? Which of these Tanaim was the city of B'nai Brak? It was the city of Rabbi Akiva. B'nai Brak was the city of Rabbi Akiva's residence. And he was the Posek Ha'ir for B'nai Brak. He was the halachic decider for B'nai Brak. Out of deference to Rabbi Akiva's authority, however, all present, including Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, follow his ruling on this Leil HaSeder, that the Korban Pesach, and consequently Achilas Matzah, and Sipur Yitzhiya Mitzrayim could be performed throughout the night until the dawn. And how do we know? Because how you misapim b'tzias Mitzrayim call also halayla at Shabbat tamidim v'amula meroseinu gizman kriyas shemashal shachris. So that's one pshat. Based on this Talmudic debate between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, which affects not only Achilas Korban Pesach but also Sofzman Achilas Matzah and Sofzman Sipur Yitzhiya Mitzrayim, we learn from the fact that it happened in B'nai Brak, which was Rabbi Akiva's city. What happened in B'nai Brak, which is where Rabbi Akiva was the Posek Ha'ir, there was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. What do we learn from here? The great respect the Tanaim had for each other. It ties in so beautifully to the first whole part of Shir. That a Jew could have another way of life. And again, I'm going to repeat, I'm not endorsing that if somebody doesn't live al pichar and halacha, you should become like them. But va'avta recha kamocha, and showing kavod for your fellow Jew, doesn't mean I have to be the dayan. There's one dayan, it's not me. Other commentaries, continue Rabbi Golden, open the door to less literal interpretations of this scholarly conversation on that fateful Pesach night. The sages mentioned in this episode, the five Tanaim here, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, all lived during the time of the Bar Kokhba rebellion against Rome. Okay, so the Korban happened in 70 Common Era, and the Bar Kokhba rebellion happened approximately 65 years later, which takes us to 135 Common Era. That's when these Chachamim lived. It was an extremely turbulent time of upheaval in Eretz Yisrael and for Am Yisrael. They're in the aftermath of the Korban. It also relates to one of the Pshatim that I suggested, that it was Shas HaShmad. The Romans, we know, were slaughtering Jews. It's not so hard to believe that they killed 24,000 students in 7 weeks. The Germans killed that many in a day throughout Europe. Rabbi Akiva himself, we know, was a major supporter of the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. He was the Rav of the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, and he believed for a time that he was Mashiach. That's why they called him Bar Kokhba, by the way. It's from Bilam's Nevuah. Darach Kochav Miyakov is the prophecy of Bilam for Mashiach. A star will shoot forth from Yaakov. They named him Bar Kokhba, Kochav. Darach Kochav Miyakov from Bilam's Nevuah. Which is the belief, if you look at Unkus there, in Malach HaMashiach from the Torah. Rabbi Akiva believed that he was Malach HaMashiach, and they were going to win against the Romans and restore Jewish sovereignty, and the end of Jewish destiny would come to fulfillment. So now, Rabbi Golden suggests, might this gathering in the darkness of night actually be a clandestine meeting prior to the Bar Kokhba rebellion? Are the rabbis discussing the current events of the evil Roman rule, even as they recall past persecution in Egypt? Are they debating the wisdom of armed rebellion against the might of Rome? Or are they carefully laying out plans for a military campaign? This is historically the time when this Seder happened. We don't know exactly what they were discussing. Maybe they were intermeshing. You'd see it, Shibun Mitzrayim, Avadim Ha'inu L'Parba Mitzrayim, and the events in Eretz Yisrael at that time. Perhaps the night during this discussion, Hayu Mishapim B'tziyah Mitzrayim, called also Halayla. Laila is a metaphor for galus, for darkness, for Shibud. Perhaps this night does not only mean the night of Pesach, but the night of our persecution across time. Second pshat of Rabbi Golden is, the first one is based on a halachic machlokes, milchamta shel Torah, between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva. And the lesson we learn from there is the respect that the Tanaim were able to have for each other, even if they did not agree with each other. Second pshat also relates to the first piece of Gemara that we learned, because it was a shas hashmad, and maybe they were gathered, they were the leaders of the generation, not only to discuss Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim, call also Halayla, the travails of foreign dominion, the travails of a foreign ruler, the persecution that was taking place. Maybe they were plotting the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Maybe they were discussing how to support him. Maybe they were talking about what the Romans are doing in our land. Maybe Rabbi Kiva said, you know, they're going to start slaughtering my students, call also Halayla. Perhaps this is not only the night of persecution of Shibun Mitzrayim, of Adi Meilinu, of Aldus Parach, Kol Abeni Yulara Yar Tashlichuhu. Maybe it wasn't only the night of persecution of Egypt that they're discussing. Maybe they're discussing the night of persecution in the time period in which they lived. If so, the Haggadah is referencing a scene destined to be repeated throughout our history time and again. Surrounded by the encroaching darkness of a hostile world, fearful of a knock at the door, Jewish leaders, they were the Rabbanim, they were the leaders, the spiritual leaders. They gave strength to the people. They gave hope to the people. Jewish leaders converged. Do our Rabbanim today not have conferences where they discuss matters pressing to our communities? They converge in secret to discuss, debate, plan, and speak about ways to ensure the survival of their people and the survival of Torah. And Rabbi Akiva was primary in this, ensuring the survival of our people and the survival of Torah. This too relates to Yuval Mosamach Beis Beis. Because what did he do? Let's go for a minute with the pshat that it was Shas HaShmad. So he went, Hayah Olam Shameim. The world was desolate. When there's no Torah, the world cannot be upheld. At Shabbat Rabbi Kiva, Eitzel Rabbeinu Shabbadaram, V'shana Lahem. Rabbi Kiva said, we have to find a way to persevere. We have to find a way to continue. Call also Halayla. Even if we're living in a time of great Jewish persecution, the Rabbanim got together to discuss the most pressing needs of the day. It was all foreshadowed in Shibur Mitzrayim. But how can we ensure our continued survival today? Okay, so far, looking at this passage from the Haggadah, which is happening in Bnei Brak, which is the center where Rabbi Akiva resides. Two lessons. One, the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was present shows the great respect the Tanaim had for each other, because he wasn't going according to his halachic psak, because it was called also Laila, Shabbat Tamidim Ve'amru Lahem, Rabbi Seni Gizman Kriya Shema Soch Shachris. So that means Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah deferred to and respected the position of Rabbi Akiva. Second pshat by Rav Shmuel Golden, very, very interesting. These were halachic deciders, the Rabbanim, the leaders of the generation. They are together to discuss the approach in dealing with the Romans, to discuss how we can ensure Jewish continuity, to ensure that the Mesorah will not be eradicated with the Asar Hurugay Malchus, which was under the Romans. They are talking not only about the night of Yetziat Mitzrayim, they're talking about the night of exile through which they were living. Brilliant. Brilliant. Third, Rav Shmuel Golden. And this also is relevant to Yuval Mosamach Beis Beis and what we offered from Rabbi Yudin. Because clearly, when we understand the Gemara and Yevamo Samech Beis Beis and the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva dying and the Pshatim that we have given, we see that the Gemara is not only teaching us a historical lesson, it's teaching us a lesson for us in our time. It's a lesson for us in our time. Do we love every Jew? Everyone wants to say I love every Jew. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa, of course. I don't eat bacon. I don't wear shatnez. I don't light a fire on Shabbos. I love every Jew. Do I respect every Jew? That's a lesson not only historically. Look what happened in the aftermath of the Korban. Chazal are teaching us about our day and age. And so too with this Maisib, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva. It's not only about what happened 2,000 years ago in Bnei Brak. It needs to teach us about us today as well. And here we go. Rabbi Shmuel Golden. Over time, we naturally come to view the events and figures of Jewish history one-dimensionally. The personalities of the past loom larger than life. The choices before them seem less complex than our own. The choices before them. We think we live in the most turbulent times. The world is crazier than it's ever been. That's how I feel. I can't imagine that the world was ever so crazy. I can't even imagine that the world was ever so debased, immoral, hate-filled, turbulent than it is today. And the choices that we have, the choices before them, seem much less complex than our own. Distinctions in hindsight, when we look back, distinctions between right and wrong seem so clear and easy to discern. Yeah, that's because we have hindsight, it's 2020. That's because we have commentary of Chazal. That's because we have history to learn from. But when you're actually going through it, whew, such a fantasized view of history is not only wrong, it's dangerous. It robs us of critical lessons to be learned from the past. Don't make a fantasy out of what really happened. Don't change it into a fairy tale. Learn from what it really was. It was turbulent then too. The temple had just been destroyed. The Romans were taking over the land. They were slaughtering Jews. It sounds pretty turbulent then also. During the years preceding Chorban Beis HaMikdash, which was in 70 Common Era, and now he takes us into a little history lesson, which really is so geschmack because it ties the whole shir together. So this is what's going to happen. Leave your handouts. I'm going to take him home. And by Ezra Hashem, it's still Sfiras HaOmer next week, unless somehow Mashiach comes on Eretz Yisrael, will be Sfiras HaOmer then. I don't know what they're going to do because of the barley offering from the third temple will come down from Shemaim. We're going to continue next week because I always prepare more than I can teach. And somehow I thought we were going to get through all three famous Ma'amrei Chazal with all three Chedushim. It didn't happen. Leave your handouts. I'm going to take them home and Be'ezrat Hashem bring them back next week. During the years preceding the destruction of the temple in 70 Common Era, okay, so what was happening in Eretz Yisrael before Churban Bayis Sheni? You think they got along so well then? We know why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Where's the Gemara tells you, Matas Amad Beis? Shayu Oskim Betarg Mitzvos Bayis Sheni B'pnei Macharav Shayu Oskim Betarg B'mitzvos G'milas Chasadim Shahai Sebo Sinis Chinam. They got along so perfectly then? Debates raged amongst the leaders of Judea. Should they rebel against Rome or should they acquiesce to Rome? No less a figure than the great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the scholar who eventually orchestrates Jewish survival. He asked for Yavne and its sages famously. He initially advocates for compromise and conciliation with Rome. So what was happening in the years leading up to the Churban? They saw the Romans were there. They saw they were taking over the land. And some said we should fight back. And some said we should rebel. And some said we should overthrow the Romans. And some said just be quiet and keep your head down and agree with them. When war breaks out, Judea remains so scary. When we think of the Matz of today. When war does break out, Judea remains rife with internal conflict. So deep is this tragic discord that the battle spills into the streets of Jerusalem. Even as the enemy besieges the city from the outside, inside, the Jews are fighting. The Judean revolt is smothered by the Romans. The temple is destroyed. Thousands are killed and thousands are exiled. Even as the city is besieged from the outside, Medina Israel today is surrounded by millions, billions, millions, millions, millions and millions of enemies who want to destroy us. The internal discord spills out into the streets of Jerusalem, even as the city is under siege by the enemy. The Jews rebel against Romans twice in the years that follow. The second of these rebellions garners the support of Rabbi Akiva, arguably the greatest sage of his day. I'm not going to say he was arguably the greatest sage of his day. He's one of the greatest sages of all times. So taken is Rabbi Akiva with the charismatic leader, Shimon Bar Kozeba. He names him Bar Kochva, son of star, which I already told you is from Bilaam's prophecy, Darach Kochav Miyakov. This act reflects the hope of Rabbi Akiva, shared by many of his time, that Shimon Bar Kozeba might actually be the Messiah. However, Rabbi Akiva's support for the rebellion is far from universally accepted, even within the rabbinic community. Dissent, strife, disagreement, discord. After initial dramatic victories, the Bar Kochva rebellion is cruelly suppressed by the Romans with devastating consequences. The Romans kill, exile, and sell into slavery the majority of the population of Judea in squelching the Bar Kochva rebellion. The Roman Emperor Hadrian moves to remove Jewish national identity. It is then, and the Rav has a whole beautiful piece on the Lord is righteous in all his ways, which I definitely don't have time for, as to why it was only after the Bar Kochva rebellion, 65 years after the Churban, that the Shas HaShnat and the squelching of Torah began. It didn't begin right away with the Churban. Initially with the Churban, they let the Jews alone. After the Bar Kochva rebellion begins, the prohibition against studying Torah ties to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, we're coming up to Lag Bomer, everything's connected. Masechah Shabbos Lamed Gimel. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son had to hide in a cave for 12 years. Why? Who were they running away from? Who were they hiding from? Not their neighbors, the Romans. First, they were in the Beis Medrash, but then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, oh no, Nashim Date and Kalos, the minds of women are weak, light. The Romans might capture mother, she'll reveal our hiding place. We have to go to the cave for 12 years. Why did they have to go to the cave? It was a student. It was one of the new five students of Rabbi Akiva. At Shabbat Rabbi Akiva, eight sorrows of Seinu Shabbadaram, Vishan Aleb. The Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Why does he have to go to a cave? Who's he hiding from? The Romans. The name of Judea is wiped off Roman maps, and it is replaced with Palestina. You can see the coins. Remember I told you about my tour guide, and I did a half a day tour with him at the Ezra Rosenfeld. Half a day tour at the archaeological wing of what's the museum called in Jerusalem? Yeah, the big museum. Where the dead ski schools are. The Israel Museum? Okay, thank you. And you could see the coins from the time of both the Bar Kochva rebellion. It's amazing, I have pictures of it. And also the Roman coins that were minted. It was not called Judea anymore. It was called Palestina. And Jerusalem itself becomes Aelia Capitolina, capital, Capitolina. You can see it on the coins. You can read it. It's incredible. So great is the devastation that some historians consider the beginning of Gallus Romae not from the Churban, but from the persecution that emanated after the Bar Kochva rebellion. In retrospect, and now we bring it down to our times, questions must be asked. Would it have been better to compromise with the Roman rule rather than risk the utter destruction? Yet had we compromised, would we have lost our spiritual way? Would we still be here today, long after the Roman Empire faded into dust? What constitutes defeat? And what constitutes victory? Yes, we were exiled from our land. Yes, the temple was laid in ruins. Yes, many were killed. I'm not minimizing that, God forbid. But do you note that Am Yisrael is still here? And the ancient Roman Empire is a relic of a coin in the Israel Museum in the Antiquities Wing. While the particulars may have changed, says Rabbi Golden, the basic physical and spiritual battles facing the Jewish people remain constant over the centuries. the basic physical battle for our survival. In different countries, it's a physical battle for survival. And the spiritual battles remain constant over the centuries. Perhaps the rabbis were discussing, when do we resist? When do we compromise? What are the red lines? When do principles stand and when must we make concession? Perhaps so many centuries ago in Bnei Brak, some of these very debates raged around the Pesach Seder. So today we looked at two very famous passages in regard to the life of the great Tana Rabbi Akiva. Actually, V'haftar Echa Kamochi could say is the third. And one is Yivam Osamach Beis Beis. And a new understanding, a very new and very relevant and very prevalent understanding of Mpnei Shalon Ahagu Kavod Zelaza. And then an ancient Seder that happened almost 2,000 years ago in the aftermath of Chorban Bayis Sheni, on the heels of the Bar Kochba Rebellion, when the Tanaim came together under the leadership of Rabbi Akiva to debate not only the issues of their time, but a foreshadowing of Jewish history. Be'ezer Hashem, please leave the handouts. I'm going to take them home and bring them back. We'll continue next week. Thank you so much, everybody. Kol tov. Good Shabbos to all.